All right. So the question is, what's our topic today? So I don't know. But I decided to dedicate, I wanted to talk about assuming there are some people that are actually leaving the yeshiva and going on to bigger and better things, maybe. Maybe not. Some people not. But some people are. So the shaila is, how does a person, when a person, in the long range, instead of talking about this next year and the immediate future, long range planning, how does one succeed in really succeeding? To put the question differently, is that you see in the yeshiva, I'm a little older than you people, just a little bit, and you see in yeshiva some people who, even talking about guys who go through the whole 14-year program, 15-year program, 20-year program, right? You get married late, you get to learn more years, just for the record. So any guys who go through, you have some guys who go through the program and they come out quite impressive, Talmid Chachamim. And you have some people that go through the program and they don't come out so impressive. And it's not even, obviously sometimes one was a bigger masmid, one was a bigger kishrinus, but sometimes that's not the answer. Sometimes you see two people with the same, seemingly same kishrinus and the same degree of hasmada, and yet, you know, little differences you don't see in the beginning. But after 15 years, little differences grow. You know, that's the way it is. And they're rochik mizrach v'mayriv. You know. And even though they, you know, both of them might be out in the field and they both might have jobs in chinuch and everything, but in my opinion, they're rochik mizrach v'mayriv. They might not agree, but I think so. That might be part of the problem. But okay, anyway, the Maisa. So that's the Shaida. The Shaida is a little bit long-term. How do you explain what a long-term people need to do for 15 years to succeed in growing? I got notes somewhere in my pocket, but I lost them. Let me see if this is my note. Okay. So I have wrote down a few things. The first thing is you have to have a drive and a desire to grow and to change. It sounds very simple, but it's amazing. Many, many, many people do not want to really change. They want to basically be the same, just to be, you know, to know a little more. But to change is scary for certain people. Change means, you know, I'm Mr. Cool. It means I won't be Mr. Cool anymore. I'm whatever I am. You know, there's people view something, certain things, that's who they are. That's their personality. And to change, I don't want to change. You know, I'm ready to grow with who I am. I'm ready to learn a little more, to be a bigger Talmud Chacham, more Yiras Shamayim. But I'm not ready to make a total transformation, to change from a caterpillar to a butterfly, right? That's a dramatic change. You can almost not recognize a caterpillar and a butterfly, right? So there are people, I've seen this very often, there are people that come to yeshiva and they even stay 15 years, but they're held back because they, deep down, on some level, they're afraid of changing. And therefore, of course, they don't change. So they I don't say they don't grow. Obviously, you're learning, you're growing. But the major leaps and bounds of becoming, you know, going from a American bum, I don't like the word bum, but, you know, American whatever, probably bum is the right word, but to a really Ben Taira, is a major change, you know, where we grew up, all of us grew up. You know, you go up with television and the movies and all kinds of crazy things. And it's a total change. It's a different, the goal to be, you know, someone that ruchnius is, you know, the the center of your life. You know. I don't want to sound corny, but I'll say it anyway. It bothers me when I see a supposedly choshava guy, someone who learned in yeshiva for 20 years and he's a Rebbe, and he's getting all excited about the football game. You know, it's, come on, grow up, you know? Like, that means that you never change. I don't mean you can't a little bit entertainment. It's okay, a person's allowed entertainment. But there's different degrees of how excited a person gets. In the Geisha world, there are people that the football game is their life. That's mamish their life. I remember a few years ago, there was a bris here in yeshiva, and there were two uncles that hadn't seen each other for like 20 years. And they meet, and all they're talking about is, how's the football team in Los Angeles? And how's the football team in, that's all they talk about. It was like, come on, is there anything else to talk about? What about your kids? All it's about the football. You know, that means that the person, if after 20 years the guy's still, life is revolving around the football, it means he hasn't changed. That's only a simon. I'm not saying that's the ikker. But there are people that are afraid of change. And a person has to be ready. Change doesn't come, is hard. But you got to be ready to change. You got to want to change. You got to wish. I wish I could. I still need the football, and realistically I need the entertainment, and realistically I need I'm not holding there, and I shouldn't fool myself that I'm holding there. But I can wish, and I'm striving, and I'm aiming, and I want to get there. And that's a big thing. That's the first step. A person has to have the desire to change. The second thing is probably even more important, and this is where probably many, many people flunk out, is you have to have a plan to change. Many people, they come to yeshiva, and they just go through the motions, because that's how people, it's mitzvahs anashim ulamada. Mitzvahs anashim ulamada is one of the biggest problems in the world. It means that you just do it out of habit. Yeshiva is a very convenient mitzvah on Nashon Amada. You get into a groove, and you stay there for 14 years, and Sunday you have noodles, and Monday you have whatever, pizza, and Tuesday, you get into the groove, and that's it. And you continue that groove for 15 years. And that's terrible. A person has to have a plan. A person every year, I think this is extremely important, every year, in the beginning of the year and at the end of the year, the guy has to think, especially in the beginning of the year, what is my plan for this year? What am I going to do this year? And not, okay, I'm going to learn. No, that's not enough. What am I out to accomplish this year? Why is this year going to be different than last year? What am I doing special this year? What am I focusing on? Now, very often it could be because every year has a different opportunity. Next year I'm going to be in Rabbi David Harris this year. David Harris is a special opportunity. So I want to take advantage of that special opportunity. So you got to have this year I'm going to go ahead and grow in my Ian skills. Next year I'm going to grow in my Bikia skills. Next year I'm going to grow in my Mishnah Brewer skills. But a person has to have a plan. If you just go through life and whatever happens, happens, then you do not end up growing.
If your plan is to be at all this darn and do what you're supposed to do, then whether you're going in...
No, it's not good enough. I'm sorry.
why are you
That's a good thing, because it's not good enough, because it's too ambiguous. It's like saying my plan is that I'm going to be nice, that every day is Mother's Day, right? Every day is Mother's Day, then you're never nice to your mother. You have to have a... I'm going to do everything perfect. Okay, I'm not saying it's bad, but it's not good enough. And I'm serious, because when you have a explicit goal, which is much more crystallized, My goal is that I am going to be, you know, I'm going to finish the Masechta. I'm going to do 80 blanim and mikiyas. I'm going to do this and this amount in Mishnah Berurah, and I'm going to know it. I'm going to chazer it 5 times. I'm going to know it about Beth. My goal is that in Shir, I'm going to go right up every sugya and know it cold. You know, whatever, you know, or it's not a realistic goal for some people. So you have to make, there's no point in making goals that aren't realistic. So my goal is 30 blot. My goal is 20 blot. My goal is to 20 blot, I'm going to chazer it and I'm going to know it perfectly. I'm going to know the Shakti Vitaya. I'm going to, you know, they're not just, I'm going to come to Seder, I'm going to learn. It's not good enough, because that type of plan doesn't keep you going day after day. That's what I'm saying. Every day after day, it's just exactly the same. And especially you have to hear that for those people who are going on to Queens, and not just day after day, it's year after year. You end up doing the same thing for 10 years in a row. You know, it's a hard thing to do the same thing for 10 years in a row. Basically, the same Seder. It's not just the same supper for, you know, lunch for 15 years. It's the same everything for 15 years. The same base medrash, the same seat, the same friends, the same. So you make, I'm going to learn. I really don't think that's enough. A person has to have a plan, something that pushes him. You have to have and every year you got to have. You see, I wrote here another thing, that it's not enough to have a plan. You have to be excited about your plan. That's very important. In other words, when you're going to be in a place for 15 years, so many people they lose their oomph. So they just go through the motions. You got to be excited. And the way to get excited is also by your plan. By saying, see, if you say, my goal is to do everything, to learn every Seder, it's hard to get excited, because that was the same plan I had last year, and the same plan I had the year before, and the same plan I had the year before. So what's exciting? But if my plan is that this year I'm going to learn by this most amazing Rebbe in the world, and he, you know, and once in a lifetime, you know, you're going to be learning with Rabbi David Harris, and he's a Choshev Gadol, and I can sit and learn with him. Wow, you know? You only can't get to learn with a Choshev Gadol privately, because of this year. It's not such a simple thing. And I can get to learn with him. It's a golden opportunity. So I'm going to take advantage. I'm going to learn. I'm going to take advantage of this opportunity. Next year, I won't have this opportunity anymore. Next year, I'll be in Rabbi Grumblatt's chair. It's a different opportunity. Rabbi Grumblatt has different strength. But this is my once-in-my-lifetime opportunity for this. And if not now, never. So, you know, you get yourself worked up and excited. You go into Kodal. This is my chance to learn Mishnah Berurah. I never learned really Mishnah Berurah well. Now I'm learning Masechta Shabbos in the Kodal. I'm going to know it Shabbos. Finally learn Hilchos Shabbos. Wow. I'm going to say a Chabura. I never said a Chabura before. You know, whatever it is, you know, I'm going to go branching. I never went branching before. You know, you can get yourself excited. Every year there's something different. And you got to get yourself excited. When a person is excited about things, so his brain works better, his adrenaline goes. When you come into yeshiva and every day is just a repeat of yesterday and there's nothing special, and, it's so you have no energy and your brain doesn't work. And okay, then, so you gotta have, I think this is major important. Yeah, I wrote there, I remember one of the, to me, was a very inspiring thing. I mentioned this story, I'm sure, to many people. We went to Rav Huttner. This goes back close to 30 years ago. We went to Rav Huttner, and Rav Huttner was considered then, obviously, one of the biggest Gedolim. And he was also, especially in the area of what's called Machshava, he was considered like the biggest, you know, Gadol in the world. He was the one that, so to speak, broke through a whole new Shita in the Kabbalah and whatever, you know, Kabbalistic, bringing in Kabbalistic terms into you know, thought. And I remember he was telling us, so I don't know how it came about, But I remember him saying that when he was in Europe, I assume it was in the 20s, I don't know, 20s, early 30s, I don't know when it was. He said he decided to go to Israel because he wanted to learn Kabbalah, and there was only one person in the world, in the Ashkenazi world at least, that was considered reliable to learn Kabbalah from. And that was the Baal HaLeshem, that was Rabbi Yosher's grandfather. In the Ashkenazi world, the Sfardim had other later Mekubalim, but in the Ashkenazi world, he was the last of the accepted Mekubalim, basically. I don't want to say maybe, but other Mekubalim, but you know, that's basically known. So he decided he's going to go to Israel and learn from him. And he said, by the time he got off the boat, he heard that the Leshem was dead, died. And this was like 50 years later. So he said, I blew it. He says, I should have left Europe earlier. You know, I decided I wanted to go. But, you know, so I should have jumped on that, you know. But I took, you know, whatever it is. Once he decided, until I made up my mind, until I went, or whatever. You know, not every opportunity, people think, one of the great mistakes of youth is that you do not appreciate the opportunities that you have. I know that about myself. So many opportunities I had looking back, and I can't believe I didn't take more advantage of those opportunities. You know, you had so many great opportunities. So some of them you did, and some of them you didn't. Now, maybe you took better, maybe other people took less advantage, you know, okay? But it doesn't mean you still blew it. You know, you had great people, and we had so many great opportunities, and we blow opportunities, and then they come back. And then later we look back, and we can't believe it. So Rav Huttner, he's 80, 90 years old. I don't know how old he was. It was near the end of his life. He was, hey, I blew it. Because I had this great opportunity, and I took my time, and I missed it. So you got to get excited. This is your once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. You don't take it, it's lost. You might never get a repeat. You know, it's not like, there isn't three repeats in life very often. So you got to hop and grab it. So when you get excited, this is my chance, I'm in this great shir, I have this great Rebbe, I have this great opportunity, I'm in this great yeshiva, whatever it is, you know, whatever yeshiva, most places are great. So you got to get yourself excited, you got to get yourself driven, you got to figure out a plan, how I'm going to take advantage. Okay, the Rebbe has all these benefits, how am I going to benefit from it? How am I going to gain it? That's the first step. Okay. Now I have a totally different topic, but it's the same thing. This, so to speak, a little bit of, there's like Sur Me Rav Asay Taif. So we started with the Asay Taif. Now we'll switch a little bit to the Sur Me Rav. There is the biggest growth that guys grow in yeshiva, I think, is in the, not so much in Bekiyas. Okay, obviously Bekiyas is nice. You gain a nice amount of Bekiyas. And, okay, he and skills are nice. It's also good. But the real thing of growth, I think this is what Rashiva held. I'm not 100% sure, but I think this is what he held, is Yashras HaSeichel. There are certain people that have Yashras, and certain people don't. It sounds funny, but it's true. Most people are born krum. How's that for a great sentence? An average person, 99.9% of the world, it doesn't mean he doesn't have the capacity of being straight, but a person is naturally krum. Means his natural thinking skills are sloppy. The natural person, unless he's trained, he cannot discern the difference between two things that are similar. You have to train him to focus your eyes, to notice differences, right? Without training, people will say, hey, they all look the same, right? That used to drive me crazy. When I was 1 year, I was giving the equivalency of, it might even been a share before of my sharpened share, when the The guys used to say Pshat, guys would say, would ask a question, and there were some smart guys in the shir, and they'd give an answer. And obviously, usually 9 out of 10 times, their answer was wrong. And then I would say the right answer. And they would say, that's what I said. I would say, this has nothing to do with what you said. What do you mean? It's exactly what I said. Well, yeah, of course it's exactly what you said. Because the starting point was the same. There was a question. And the conclusion is the same. So there's no question. But the middle is completely different. And the guy just couldn't hear that because it's so similar. Oh, it's almost the same. And it has nothing to do with it. But because that's a certain lack of intellectual clarity that people have. People are to different levels. But even the smartest guys in the world, and I say this, I think this is true, except for maybe one or two weird geniuses. 99.9% of the people in the world, even guys who are considered geniuses and very smart, have a certain krumkeit in the way they think. They're sloppy, they missteps, they make mistakes, they say things that aren't logical, they say things that you listen to them and you say, you cringe, how can anyone say something so stupid? But they're doing, and they don't realize it. They don't stop to think about what they're saying. They don't think about the ramifications of what they're saying. Or even if they think they understand things, they understand it superficially. There's superficial understanding and deeper understanding. I know the difference. This is white and this is black, but why does white and black make a difference, right? I was doing in shir today. We said the gabi, right? So everyone can say the words. That to the gabi this is this and the gabi that is that. It's very easy. But we tried to explain and share why it makes sense. Right? Now, half the guys say, I understand. Yeah, sure, the gabi. But does it make any sense? So everything in life. They think they got the words, but they don't have the Havana. There's such a major thing. Then that's one of the greatest things you gain in learning. Is the ability to correct the way you think. And one of the biggest problems, it's a pachad, that you see guys who go through the yeshiva 15 years, and after 15 years they're still making the same stupid mistakes that they made 15 years ago. And I meet them in chinuch 50 years later, and I'm not joking, I meet some of these guys, and I remember them from when 50 years ago. And they're still making that same stupid mistake. I'm ready to wring their necks. Both. There were some of the smartest guys in yeshiva were like that. I lost my paper there. Because I got excited. Because very often a guy is very smart. He's also very stubborn. And he will not accept that he makes it. The first thing is you have to be ready to accept that you can make a mistake. And you have to be ready to accept that, that I'm not, even though I think I'm very smart, and I am maybe very smart, but I, by definition, if I'm only 20 years old, then my probability is my brain is not fully developed, and I'm making all kinds of mistakes. And I have to, it's not an embarrassment. And you don't say, that's what I said. And I have so often, I get this in shir all the time, where guys obviously make a mistake, and I correct them, like, oh, that's what I meant. You didn't mean that. Come on, you think I fall for that. Come on, you didn't mean that at all. Admit that you made a mistake, buddy. But the guy won't admit he made a mistake. There's even guys that know, and if he went to Shiva, there are guys that would argue with Shiva. I remember there was a guy, I was going to wring his neck in Queens, where he was arguing. Rashiva had amazing patience. I don't have so much patience. Rashiva would argue with a guy for like an hour. So she was arguing with a guy for about an hour. The guy was so wrong. And the Yeshiva proved him that he's wrong, and the guy went here, so the Yeshiva would go from a different angle to prove him that he's wrong. And he brought like five riots that he was wrong. I'm exaggerating, but I don't think so. And at the end, and the Yeshiva spent like a whole hour trying to, and the guy wouldn't give in. Okay? And again, you know, fine, I said, Yeshiva, I could get it right. I proved to you five different ways that you're wrong. He explained it to you. Okay? The guy walks into the dining room, and he was all worked up because, and he says to me, the Yeshiva just couldn't admit he was wrong. You know? So, you know, people like that. Where that guy is, I have no idea. He didn't even make it to Chinuch. What?
What did you ever say back to the guy?
I don't think I said anything. I had to control myself not to wring his neck, that's all. But you meet these people all the time. It's a pachad. There are people that cannot admit that they made a mistake. And even if, when you catch them on making a mistake, they will come up with the craziest answer to answer the mistake that you, like, come on, you really believe that one? Like, you know, you said something, you point out their mistake, so they come up with the, you know, and I said, you know, okay, listen. If you believe that, then go, I can't talk to you. You know, that's how they are. They just say these most, they will never admit, and there were a few really chashuv guys in yeshiva in Queens in my day that had this problem, and they never got straightened out because they never would admit. Now it also, you know, even if you're not, you know, there's a certain thing of having to accept that you don't got things clear to be able, you see, let's say you don't have things so perfectly clear. But if you're not gonna ready to admit to yourself that you don't got it clear, then you're never gonna work on getting it clear. So you have to admit, you have to be honest with yourself. You have to say, you know, I got the structure. I don't really hear this far. Okay, maybe right now that's all I can do. But I don't fool yourself. But to fool yourself and think, yeah, I got it perfectly, when you don't have it perfectly, is not healthy. Because you got it, that's, okay. Anyway, that's a serious, serious thing. And I say this in all seriousness, that there are guys, some of my chaverim, I still meet them and I'm still ready to wring their necks. They haven't changed. Okay. Now, included in this is also something which is not so simple, because those, I'm saying, is for the guys going to Queens.
Have you met some that have made that change?
Yeah, probably. Most people, I think, have made the change. I don't say the majority. Most people have made change. Most people have improved tremendously. But there's a certain miut, and very often, but not always, it's some of the guys who were the smartest guys who have refused to change. Because they're Bawi Gaiva. Plain simple. You know, there was a guy in the yeshiva that it was Bavus among the Chevra. And when this guy says Chabura, it's Galakta. You know, like I think it's a joke. He was like one of the smartest guys in yeshiva, but his Chaburas were always jokes. Because he could never, anytime you're literally making Chabura, your first shot's usually wrong, but then you change and you improve it. But he could never admit he made a mistake to himself either. So the first thing he thought of was always right. Then he built the tower, but it was always wrong. Like, you know, so there was nothing to talk about this. Okay, anyway, the important thing here, I assume this applies here too, but especially in Queens, it applies more. You know, and I take it back. It doesn't apply here. Okay, it depends how you say it. The Chofetz Chaim Shita Bidavka is a very strange shita. And one of the shitas is that the, you know, the Rabbeim, let's take Rabbi Harris, Rabbi Grumblat, they do not try and see, make themselves look chashiv. Right? It's completely opposite of the rest of the world. Where the rest of the world, I told the guys recently, I was on a taxi in Sheirut in Israel with a person who was a Rebbe in the high school of the Panovich. I couldn't get the guy to smile, you know. But I was at a wedding. I was at Ben Sion Chait's wedding years ago. his daughter was getting married. I think it was his daughter or son. I don't remember. Someone was getting married. I went into the wedding. And Rabbi, I was called up to be an aide. Rabbi Dovin Harris was called up to Misal de Kedushin. And then they realized that they didn't have the ksuva. So they left the ksuva in the Cheder Yichud. So they stopped. They didn't do anything. And someone went to get the ksuva. So you had 500 people standing there, sitting there, staring at Rabbi Harris, who was just called up to Misal de Kedushin. But he wasn't going to do anything until they brought the ksuva. So 500 people staring at him, you know, and knew, do something. So what was he doing? So him and Rabbi Jake were telling jokes to each other. I think I'm standing there like, come on, you know, look kashuv, you know, come on, make believe, pull your beard, something, you know. You know, Rabbi Jake tells Rabbi Harris a joke, and Rabbi Harris, oh, that's a good joke, you know, come on. That's how it is. Yeshiva Shita is that the Rabbeim don't put on any ears. And the, you know, even the fact that you call them Rabbi Harris and Rabbi Grumblatt, come on, yeshiva is the world, they would never go, right? You know, they go with Rav this and Rav that, you know. First name, you know, that's not Choshev, Rabbi Grumblatt, it sounds so. Rabbi Grumblatt for sure, you know, he just doesn't have that look. I don't know. Rabbi Harris a little bit. And Rabbi Grumblatt does not have the look, I don't know, he just doesn't know how to look like a Rosh Yeshiva. No, he just doesn't. Rabbi Harris, also not too much, but a little bit better. I don't know. Neither of them. So that is the yeshiva shita. The yeshiva shita was because the yeshiva had a shita, which is a very important hashkafa, that the yeshiva held that gaiva corrupts, and that the biggest yetzer, the yetzahara of gedolim is gaiva, not. You know, well, you don't expect the gadol to be nichshel in taiva, and nichshel in this, and nichshel in that. But gaiva is a hard yetzahara, even for a gadol. So Rishiva's answer to that is, run away from kavod. Do everything you can to avoid kavod as much as you can. Okay, and that we don't do PR in the yeshiva. We don't do...
What if that comes out as a detriment to yeshiva?
So that's what I'm saying. It does come out to a detriment. But Aval Pigain, that was the Rosh Yeshiva Shita. Rishiva Shita that way. So the Maisa, that's what I'm trying to make in that point, that you should hear. You're going to, and the Rebbeim will act like they're just like, you know, they'll act very, very down to earth, and they're not going to, and you can almost forget that these are Choshev people. You know, okay, there's a Rabbi so-and-so. You know, my ninth grade Rabbi was Rabbi so-and-so, and my 10th grade Rabbi is Rabbi something else, and now I'm 11th grade. Now I got another Rabbi. You don't hear. People equate one Rabbi with another. You know, it's like we did it too. I mean, I remember things. I remember, I'm embarrassed now, the things I did when I was in the yeshiva. You know, okay, because we didn't treat the yeshiva with respect either. But even the yeshiva, we didn't, you know, you think with people treating with respect. Okay, that's the way it was. So the ma'isa is something to realize that they're not going to blow their own horn. So you have to realize on your own that they're very chashuv people, and you got to take advantage of them. And, you know, that should inspire you. Okay. Next thing. For some reason or another, I don't know exactly why, but there's a machla in America called cynicalism. Is that the right word?
Cynicism.
Okay, my English isn't right. People are cynical. They're tremendously cynical. It's a tremendous machla. And it obviously continues in the yeshiva either also. And people are very negative. And you have a whole, I don't know what's it called, a fifth wing, is that what's it called?
Fifth column,
even in Queens, of guys who are, you know, we're in Chafetz Chaim because we went to the branches, we're in Chafetz Chaim. But this yeshiva is really no good, you know. I'm a Talmud of Rabbi Cohn, except that Rabbi Cohn doesn't have such a good yeshiva, so I'm here. But really, I don't hold it here. I hold it over there. or I'm a Talmud of Rabbi Chopper, which is not very convenient because he's dead. Very easy to be a Talmud of someone who's dead, you know. Rabbi Chopper didn't hold it. Rabbi Chopper wouldn't have held to this. He wouldn't have held to that. You know? And I found out Rabbi Chopper Shita, you know, like I've never even met Rabbi Chopper, but you know, there's a whole group of people that are negative, cynical, making fun, belittling, finding chesreinus. Now the problem is that there are chesreinus to find, but that's the nature because sometimes you can't have. Remember we said the shmooze, you can't have a rose without thorns, right? So there are chesreinus in the yeshiva, and yeah, of course you can find chesreinus. And people are also human beings, and human beings have chesreinus. And even a gadol can be a gadol in one area, and in a different area he has a chisaron. But when you focus on the chisaron and you highlight it, and you know, like in these cartoons, when you know, make Obama's ears, you know, 15 miles bigger than they are, so you find the chisaron and you exaggerate and you focus on it, then you lose all respect. And that's very, very prevalent. It's a major problem. And it's a major problem in I assume, in all yeshivas. I know it's a major problem in Queens, and I assume it's everywhere. It's the attitude in America. People, even the humor today, all the humor today is making fun of people. Like that's, you don't have any more a joke that's just funny. Every joke is because you made fun of someone, you know, put down. That's, I got the guy. You know, you made ridicule of him. So people do that in yeshiva too. I remember, this goes back at least 30 years ago. He was one of the mamish gedolei ador. I'm not going to say who. But mamish, one of the biggest gedolei ador, was speaking somewhere. And I went to listen. And I wanted to hear him speak. He was speaking in America. And he was speaking, I was listening, you know, every word. He was apparently a very good speaker, too. He was a very big guy, he was a very powerful speaker. And there was a guy standing next to me, or sitting next to me, who the whole time was having a running sarcasm about, you know, every time he said a line. You know, and I still remember one of his lines. He says, He's a Talmud, this Rosh Hashiva is a Talmud of such and such a gadol. He says, that gadol was a very big gadol, except he was a poor speaker. It's the only thing he learned from his Rebbe. He's throwing it to all the people around him, you know. The only thing he learned from his Rebbe, he's a poor speaker like his Rebbe, you know. He said it's not mine. One of the top, you know, I would say three gedolei ador in America at the time. You know, famous gedolei ador. You know, we don't know who the real gedolei ador were. But, you know, these guys, people are like that. All they do is they're finding faults, wisecracks, just, you know, cynical remarks. It's a machla. And it's a machla especially when you do it about someone who's chashim, or you do it about the yeshiva, because you destroy the chashivas. In order to succeed in yeshiva, you gotta be machshev the yeshiva. You gotta be machshev the rabbeim. You gotta feel this is your golden opportunity. That's what we talked about before. And when you look at for chesreinus, and you notice a chesreinus, and this is no good, and this is no good, and they don't know how to do this, and the branches were so much better, and Rabbi so-and-so is so much better, he's so much better. It's very unhealthy. Okay. And the last point, which is that it goes together, that every yeshiva in the world is made up of different sets of groups. There's no such yeshiva in the world. People think, you know, you're going to go to one of the... I remember hearing this years ago when I was in Chofetz Chaim High School, goes back a little while ago, close to 50 years ago. And I was thinking of leaving. Why was I thinking of leaving? Because there were probably some kids in my class who were, you know, they were, you know, not so good. That's like an understatement. You know, probably, you know. So I remember I spoke to someone who knew what was going on. It wasn't, And he says, you think in the other yeshiva they don't have the same thing? You know? It's how it is. Every yeshiva has certain groups are there. They're there for whatever reason why they're there. And, you know, whether it's a covet, whether their parents want them there, whether that's because they have to be there, they're there for the shidduch. But they're not, or even if they're there to shame Shemayim, but they're cynical and negative. And the question big is, what group are you going to associate? If you join that group, it's almost a psik ratio that you're going to be like them. And it's a very scary thing. You have guys that say, but these are my friends. Okay, so then don't go to that yeshiva. I don't know. Or if you're going to go to that yeshiva, get yourself new friends. But you can't go to yeshiva where your friends are the guys who are sitting in there and cutting starim and looking for all the ways to get away with things, right? Not listening to their rabbeim rules and figuring out ways to get around and, you know, and not machshav things and making fun of things. And if these are the one guys that you're going to hang around, out with, then you're going to be that way too. That's just the way human nature. You can't be, these are my friends, but I'm not going to be like them. It doesn't work. It just doesn't work, generally speaking. So if you want to go to yeshiva, then you got to get new friends. So there, no matter what yeshiva you go to, there are really some really, really solid guys who really want to learn, and they're pushing. And there are not such things. That's everywhere. So you gotta hang out with the right bunch of guys. Okay, anyway, so that's my formula. Is you gotta get yourself motivated, driven, excited, with a plan, and you gotta be mevapla your das, be ready to accept your mistakes, not to be cynical, and not to be negative, and be'ezus Hashem, in 50 years from now, when I meet you, I won't want to wring your neck. Okay.